Hello, grandchildren. What's happening? This is a very special edition of the Stunt Granny Audio. No, I don't get tired of saying that, because when I say it, it usually is a special edition. And if you've looked at the site here in the last few hours, you know that Stunt Granny, for our second anniversary, has decided to create the Stunt Granny Hall of Fame, this hollow ground. It's finally getting kicked off after months and possibly even years of talking about doing it. And with me to explain all the goings-on, all the happenings, all the reasons why, all the votes and shit like that is Dusty Ebink. Dusty, how are you, Master of Ceremonies?
Oh, I've got explanations for things that don't even need to be explained. I'm ready to go.
All right. We'll talk about this. So you and I were talking over IM, and I believe you're the one who brought up the Hall of Fame idea.
Yeah, I might have came up with it, but to your credit, you agreed with me. So that's a sign of intelligence right there. And it kind of formed from there. We kind of, I don't know, we didn't really even take a vote on it. We just said, hey, we're doing it. And we pulled the other three guys along for the ride. So that was fun.
And, yeah, and the ride included you and I talking over IM about various things, like what categories we should have and the fact that we should even have categories, how the voting would go for wrestlers and various other things to get into the Stunt Granny Hall of Fame. Of course, I remember way back when we talked about this for, like, the very first time, the joke was, I wish we had a Hall of Fame so Akeem could be in it.
Yes. Yeah, basically the Hall of Fame was invented so that Akeem could get in. he sort of embodies everything that Stunt Granny is all about.
Yeah, he really does. The whole point of Akeem the African Dream was that WWF had one-man gang under contract, and they wanted to stick it to Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream.
Yes.
And they knew that they had a big, fat white guy under contract, so they decided to make him an African. And he would do the same shucking and jiving and rapping that Dusty Rhodes would do. Of course, he did it horribly. He was terrible at this gimmick, I think, anyway. But, yeah, he was, as opposed to the American Dream, he was the African Dream. And that's what they did with that character. They made fun of somebody with it, and that's what we've spent the last 2 years doing.
Yeah, and they told Gang that they didn't have a spot on their roster for the one-man Gang, but they did have a spot on their roster for Akeem, so he's like, all right, I'm from Africa now, you know?
Yeah.
So whatever it takes to get a paycheck, that is what Stunt Granny's all about.
That's right. Goddamn right. Isn't that right, Terry Taylor? You fucking idiot.
You cock-goblin motherfucker.
He might be a cock-gobbler, but he is not what he eats. He has no penis.
Right.
So, everybody... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, how it works here is that all five of us, and I'm talking you and me, and I'm talking Kevin DeFranco, Jeremy Mays, and Jordan, all five of us, the official Stunt Granny crew, we each nominated five people or things in four categories. The categories are serious wrestler, fun wrestler, matches, and angles. So we each nominated five things for each category.
Mm-hmm.
And then we decided 3/5 majority rules. So if something was nominated 3 times, it automatically got in. And then everything else was put up for vote with the same 3/5 rule. And everything that got 3 or more votes was also voted in.
And we'll talk as we go about the things that got 3 votes right off the bat or more. And then the things that had to be kind of shoehorned or squeezed into the second round of balloting.
Yeah.
I should say after. Squeezed into the Hall of Fame after the second round of balloting. Because, again, I was going to say, not the one-man gang, Akeem wasn't going to make it directly into our Hall of Fame, but given that this is the only Hall of Fame that he would ever see the inside of, because he probably can't afford admission into a real one these days.
That's right.
We had to squeeze in a few others based on a second round of balloting, but that's okay. That's the spirit of democracy. I don't know what it is.
Well, you got to put everything up for vote, because I don't know about everybody else's strategy, but I kind of sometimes nominate the things that other people wouldn't have thought of instead of the more obvious choices, just to kind of get them some recognition.
Well, that's a good point. You can't always think of, you know, my five weren't the same as your five, weren't the same as Jeremy's five. But if something that I voted for didn't make it in the first round, there were a couple of times where I saw something on one of your guys' ballots where I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. I would happily swap out so-and-so for such-and-such. You can't think of everything, so this is a good way to get potentially 25 nominations. It's not the way it worked out in this case, but, you know, a potential for that many. And then you can say, oh, holy shit, how did I forget that Bastion Booger or whatever, something like that.
Right. Oddly enough, Bastion Booger did not come up.
Well, Booger's my pick.
How much does that guy weigh? I don't know.
Oh, my God. So, okay, so we had the serious wrestlers, and should we start with the serious wrestlers then?
Absolutely. Let's just start with the heart and soul of the whole thing. And there were three automatic bids into the serious wrestler wing of the Hall of Fame, and they are Ric Flair, Steve Austin, and Shawn Michaels.
I think these are pretty obvious. I think that anybody creating any sort of... You could have gone the WCW Hall of Fame route from, 1993 and picked a Vern Gagne and Luces and Harley Race and stuff like that. But
yeah,
you have to take into consideration who we are. Of course, we're going to immediately nominate those three. Those three are, like, the gimmies, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In fact, did they all get five votes? I don't remember. I know they all made it in the first round, but I can't remember if Flair did. I know Flair got five votes.
What Flair did? I didn't write that down.
That's the only thing
I was unprepared about here.
No problem. I was trying to jog my own memory, but if it wasn't for the fact that the whole basis of Stunt Granny was to make fun of professional wrestling for its stupidity, I would suggest calling this the Ric Flair Hall of Fame, but it's more likely going to be the Akeem Hall of Fame.
Right. Yeah, when it comes up next year, people are going to be inducted into the Akeem Hall of Fame, most likely.
Yep.
But if we took ourselves seriously one iota, it'd be the Ric Flair Hall of Fame.
Yeah. And Steve Austin, of course, personifies what we think is awesome about pro wrestling. A guy that can talk, a guy that can work, a guy that rises above it all, breaks through the glass ceiling, and goes out in a blaze of glory 3 years later.
I mean, the guy reinvented himself after a serious injury and was still top-notch worker and just a great talker. And, he went out exactly like I'd want to go out.
Yeah. And then Shawn Michaels, he is the new incomparable, Shawn Michaels.
Yep.
Nobody that I can think of has ever come back from a 4.5-year hiatus to have arguably better matches than he had in his previous 14 years.
I don't think there's any doubt he was better the last 10 years than he was in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
He was just fucking brilliant.
Yep. So, absolutely three easy picks. So let's talk about the next four that we had to throw in through the second round of balloting and start with Roddy Piper.
Piper got 5 out of 5 in the voting.
Yep. Yeah, it's one of those
unanimous selection.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you see him, he might not have been somebody you gloss over. I mean, he's hard to forget. He was, main event WrestleMania 1, at Starrcade 83 in the dog collar match, and all the way up to the present day, constantly coming back.
Yep.
But it's one of those things that when you see him, it just kind of, on somebody else's ballot, it just kind of hits you like, oh, shit, this is another guy who is, like, stunt granny material.
Yeah. My favorite wrestler of all time. He provided me with so many great memories throughout my childhood and throughout the 90s. And it's sad that he kept coming back and tarnishing his legacy. But, he has enough of a body of work where I thought it was a no-brainer.
Right. Well, he should have never come back from playing Tiddlywinks.
Yeah, he and Bob should have been wherever they were doing whatever they did. And left of the bat, right?
Right. Another guy on our list here, Ricky Steamboat, who just had a DVD come out.
Yeah,
go out and buy how is it called? Ricky the Dragon? Oh, shit. I was going to give him a plug for the hell of it. The Life Story of the Dragon. Go out and buy your Ricky Steamboat DVD, courtesy of WWEshop.com. Fantastic wrestler, had an amazing string of matches over really his whole career. against Ric Flair, the number one guy on our balloting. Never like the greatest promo in the world, but, you know, obviously his in-ring work outweighs any wow, I'm having whatever he's having when it comes to promos, too. So anyway, he's a perfect fit.
The best babyface of all time, I think. He didn't really have to be the best talker. People believed in him. People trusted him. You know, he had this, like, built-in thing, this respect with the fans. Did he ever work as a heel?
No, never.
Yeah, he didn't need to.
Nope.
So he got in with 4 out of 5. Only Jeremy voted no. I wonder what the hell he was on when he voted. But, anywho.
All right. The Rock. I mean, here's another guy who can talk a blue streak, can work a light blue streak. With catchphrases and eyebrow raises and, wow, that rhymed. I didn't intend for that to happen. Another natural, another guy from the Attitude Era where, again, when you have the five of us, I'm not trying to say that we're going to shut out people like Vern Gagne. Of course, I think maybe I didn't do that this year. I was going to induct Vern Gagne from the current day into the fun wrestler category for killing somebody else in his nursing home. But I think rather than... Yeah, that's right. You're right. Rather than go that route, of course, you know, we're an 80s and 90s bunch of guys, so The Rock is another natural for this Hall of Fame.
I mean, who knows? Next year I might throw out like a Buddy Rogers or something, but this year, who knows? Stick to what you know primarily.
Yep.
The Rock and Austin defined the Attitude Era and made Vince Russo look a hell of a lot better than what he actually was. And I think it's notable because he had a very short shelf life before he beat it the fuck out of there. But the body of work he accumulated was still good enough, by far, to get into the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah, in 7 years, and the first year of which was him smiling and waving and shaking hands with the fans. And, you know, there's another guy. For him to that's one of those things, like, The Rock is kind of like The Miz, and I'm not saying that The Miz right now is on the level of The Rock at this stage in his career, but he's one of those guys where you shit on him, and you shit on him, and you shit on him, and then he finally shows, like, shreds of character that you enjoy, and then his ring work starts to come around, and, you know, The Miz is going to be an easy Stunt Granny Hall of Famer 10 years down the road when we're averaging 50,000 hits a day and getting paid for this shit.
That's the downfall of not having territories anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go through baptism by fire on WWE TV every week, so it's a lot harder.
Yeah, and sorry, no offense to Memphis in the Flex Cavana era, but The Rock definitely did that and spent 6 months on WWF TV portraying himself as somebody that we enjoyed shitting on. I couldn't stand the fucking guy with his shoulder breaker finishing move.
Yeah. What a terrible finisher. Just, that's trash.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's like, that was the default finisher for WWE wrestlers from 84 until about The Rock. And maybe even a little bit after. Like, I think, I don't remember even ever seeing Brockus on TV, but I would swear somebody like him would always get a shoulder breaker for a finisher.
Possibly. I only remember Brockus from ECW. I tried to block out most anything he ever did. So.
Yeah, I tried to blockus Brockus myself.
I smell you there.
The last guy on our list here is one of my personal favorites of all time, Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig. I'm glad that this came up on a different ballot, too, because I'm pretty sure I put down Flair and Michaels, and then I think I put Hogan, possibly. But I put Austin and Rock because, again, like you said, they sort of defined that Attitude Era. But as soon as I saw Hennig on somebody else's list, I'm like, yeah, that's obvious. He's Mr. Perfect. He was, when I started rewatching wrestling when I was 8 and 9 years old, I always say this, he and Arn Anderson were two of my favorite wrestlers. And I'm like 8 years old cheering on a couple of heels. I was a Hulkamaniac too, but Mr. Perfect, so fucking awesome. I don't know how much more we can say about him than has already been said in our audios, but unlike his son, you can tell that Mr. Perfect loves wrestling.
Yeah.
Every second that
no one had more fun for Kenny.
You could see the twinkle in his eye.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
And, of course, he also gave us some of our, well, not to speak for everybody, but it's probably safe to say, our favorite, like, promos and vignettes of all time.
Yep. Yep.
Throwing passes to himself, football passes.
And playing baseball with Wade Boggs and hockey, whatever else he was doing.
Whatever else, throwing darts and telling Hulk Hogan
throwing
you can't
darts,
do that. Yeah.
I mean, that was the glory era of introducing people, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Everybody had a distinct character, and it was well-established before they even wrestled as it.
Yeah.
So.
And he's one of those guys that, like we've talked about in various audios before, nobody else, in hindsight I can say this, nobody else could have been Mr. Perfect.
Right.
Especially not the person who could have possibly been Mr. Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
your friend and mine, Terry Taylor.
Yeah, yeah. A dear, close, personal friend of the show.
Right, yeah. I hope he's listening right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's another guy who will never see the inside of the Stunt Granny Hall of Fame. What if
you nominated the motherfucker? We'll get to that.
Oh, I did. I nominated him and Hollywood Bob Holly, just for your sake, and neither one of them got in.
Yeah. I liked Hollywood Bob Holly. That was the best setup that motherfucker ever did. But still not worth a yes vote from me.
What if there was a physical Stunt Granny Hall of Fame? What do you imagine it would look like? What sort of artifacts do you think we would have in there?
We have Doink the Clown's cast, for sure. For sure.
Yes. Awesome. What else? We could light the entrances with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat's torch.
Nice.
I just have this vision that it's like an old, abandoned convenience store. Kind of like, isn't that what they did? I'm trying to think. The Jim Crockett Promotions office didn't. I thought I heard somewhere that was a converted convenience store.
Okay.
And then Bobby Heenan made the crack, and he saw a picture of it, and he said, yeah, then they turned it into a hojo for midgets.
Bobby Heenan.
Yeah, there's another guy. We might need to either just put him in next year, or we might need to include a promo wing for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Next year there will definitely be tweaking.
Yeah.
We got to figure out a way to get Bobby and Gorilla in there.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah, I picture the Hall of Fame would basically look like the abandoned warehouse where the gang on Savage Streets hung out.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm referencing that because Linda Blair was fucking hot.
Yes.
Jesus,
yes, she was.
Fuck.
Maybe our Hall of Fame, I don't know, maybe it should be like the back alley where Akeem, or where One Man Gang became Akeem.
Yes.
And the whole time, Slick is just walking around with his boombox.
Yeah, we will pay him $100 an hour to walk around with that boombox.
Awesome.
Man,
you know,
executively.
Brother! Brother, can't tie my shoes. I think that's a good class. This is a good first class of the Stunt Granny Hall of Fame for the serious wrestlers.
Definitely. Good workers, good talkers. Got an all-around mix here. I don't think you can really dispute any of them.
No. And if I scroll up, you've already posted the winners. I'm looking at the we don't have to skip to this category yet, but I'm looking at the wrestlers or the matches that made it into the Hall of Fame.
Okay.
And there's 1, 2, 3, 4, let's see, 4 of the guys who we voted for in the serious wrestler category, maybe 5, let's see. Shawn Michaels, Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat, Steve Austin. Yeah, there's 4, yep, which I'm sure there'll be more to come down the road.
Sure, yeah.
I'm okay with nominating Bret Hart versus Kurt Hennig next year.
Oh, yeah, God, yes. Absolutely.
Spoilers.
Yep, oops.
All right. Well, literally, here's where the fun begins. So we had the fun wrestlers category, too. And I don't know, do we really have any criteria, or was it more of an unspoken thing? Like, we know why we would vote these jackasses
into
the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, kind of anything goes here. It's just sort of instinctual. You kind of know what fun is to you, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it's a wide open category. Whereas you couldn't like nominate a really terrible match. That would kind of just be silly. But
right.
This one, kind of anything goes.
And we all have similar enough senses of humor where you weren't going to see anything so off the wall that it made one of those like awkward social moments. Like, oh yeah, that sounds like a great idea. And then somebody gets excommunicated.
Right.
So I see six names on this list, and I'm pretty sure, God, correct me if I'm wrong, but did one of them get on all five ballots too?
The automatic bid was Evil Doink.
Yes.
And then in the second round of voting, two of them got 5 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
That would be Honky Tonk and Big Boss Man.
Oh, yeah.
So those were the unanimous ones. I really, and then, well, just to clean it up here, Akeem and Repo Man got 4 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
And Norman Smiley got 4 out of 5.
Norman Smiley, fantastic.
So they were all very decisive here.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's start with Evil Doink the Clown, because he always sticks out to me for many reasons, but one in particular is that R.D. Reynolds at WrestleCraft.com has always sworn that he would never induct the evil version of Doink the Clown into WrestleCraft
because
it was such a great gimmick.
It's legitimately good. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great character. It's not WrestleCraft.
No. It started off kind of, I don't know, cringe-inducing might be a little strong, but, you know, and
what are they doing here?
Yeah, late 1992, there's a clown walking around in the bleachers and on the floor and in the stands and throughout the crowd.
Right.
Handing out animal
balloons. Penguin idea. That I will do someday if I ever book wrestling.
Did you say Penguin?
Gets closer to the ring every time you see him.
Nice.
Until one day he attacks somebody.
Awesome. That's great.
Yeah, the very first time he is way in the back, like the back of the upper deck, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like there'll be a panning the crowd, and you can just barely see the Penguin in the very back, and then every time you see him, he gets a little bit closer.
How many weeks will this go on?
A week? I don't know. It can go for months.
You actually start at the, the Alamo Dome or the Superdome or something.
Yeah.
Until they force your hand and book a show at the Manhattan Center.
Right, where everything is on top of each other, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, the beauty of Doink, I mean, it's just like, it's the psychopathic, you know, this is after John Wayne Gacy and whatever else. He was making kids cry, or, you know, he was trying to make kids cry anyway. And he had children crying in his theme music.
Yes.
Yeah, and he had Matt Bourne. I mean, Matt Bourne played the evil Doink the Clown. Better than I can imagine anybody playing an evil clown.
You know, it was like he was born to do that character.
Mm-hmm.
It was just eerie how good he was at it.
Yeah, total Jekyll and Hyde. He'd be giggling one second and just piercing a hole through the camera the next second.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a good
wrestler. And a lot of
wrestlers
have tried that, but there's been very few who've been effective at it. And I think Bourne and Roddy Piper right at the top of the list for that style.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay, so everyone makes fun of WWF for having Doink the Clown. You know, basically, and what they're doing was they're making fun of themselves being a three-ring circus. I mean, you got to give them some credit for booking or for creating a fucking clown character.
Right.
And then 3 years later, Bill DeMott comes to WCW after playing the role of Crash the Terminator on the independent scene, whatever the fuck Crash the Terminator meant.
I have no fucking clue. I was thinking about that the other day.
Unless he's like we wanted to team up with Axe the Demolisher at some point.
Total trash.
It was. It was stupid. And then he comes to WCW as Hugh Morris.
Yep.
A play on the word humorous. His finisher is called No Laughing Matter.
Right.
And he would giggle and then get very serious and then giggle and get very serious.
Right.
But there was nothing, I mean, he was a less than 300-pound guy who could do a moonsault, so big deal.
Right. Yeah. He was like 260 or 270. Big fucking deal.
Yeah. And he was an average worker at best, honestly.
Right. And the character had no heart.
No.
It was like a third-rate ripoff.
Yeah. Whereas Matt Bourne as Evil Doink embraced the character.
Yep.
So make fun all you want, but there has been worse elsewhere, doing pretty much the exact same gimmick.
Right.
So all credit in the world to Evil Doink, and I'm glad that he made it on the first five ballots right away.
Yes.
It's funny how many men made it into this category.
Yeah, lots of men. Including Norman.
Norman, holy shit.
That's not a coincidence.
That's no accident, friend.
No.
Jesus. That's bizarre. I never even realized that. Well, Honky Tonk Man.
And Akeem was the one-man gang.
So. Oh, holy shit, dude. That's incredible.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
Yep.
The common thread that we can draw here.
Indeed.
You know, Honky Tonk Man was great because he was the guy who, I'm sure he could wrestle if he tried hard enough, but he was from the Memphis territory where he just pretty much punched, kicked, and then brawled around ringside.
Yeah, headlock, walk around ringside for a while, come back, punch, kick, do the finish.
Yeah. And so he brings that to the WWF with a honk, with an Elvis Presley impersonator character, which is brilliant on its own.
Mm-hmm. And delusional in that he thought the fans were behind him.
Just like us.
Always a fun touch.
Yep. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. You're a beautiful audience. singing his own theme songs, brilliant.
Yes.
Singing Hunka 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 Honky Love at WrestleMania 6 completely off time.
And then properly identifying the Bushwhackers.
yeah, no shit.
Look!
Yeah, who are these? Who are these magazine vendors? We ain't selling no magazines. What? It's Luke. Thank God for you, Honky.
Yeah.
Just so heavy-handed, over the top. Won a coveted championship and couldn't fucking pin anybody to save his life after he won it.
Yeah, the total chicken shit heel. The ultimate fucking bad guy.
Yeah.
Scared of everybody, couldn't beat the fucking popcorn guy, but held the title longer than anyone, just by total fucking fluke.
Yep.
And then, like the ultimate professional, he put over everyone that put over him on his way up.
Exactly right. That's exactly, I don't know, I mean, I don't know if he may have won matches by disqualification or count out, and I know he lost plenty of them that way too when he was the champion. But fuck if I know if he ever even won a match after he lost the belt.
Right.
Maybe a squash is Rhythm and Blues. I know he won squashes on Superstars, but that doesn't...
Yeah.
So, well, yeah, what a professional.
Yep.
And he's got a little chip on his shoulder these days, but actually, it's funny. He's actually broken some news. I can't think of a couple of headlines off the top of my head, but he's actually broken news on his HonkyTonkMan.com website in the last few years.
Oh, yeah.
It's weird. He's like, but he is like the prototype for the chicken shit heel. He is the name that keeps coming up every time a heel wins a belt and then flukes their way through their championship.
Yeah, they did it with Christian a while back. They did it with Santino.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. So he's got staying power.
Often imitated, never duplicated.
That's right. Damn right. Also on the list, the Big Boss Man.
Yep.
You know, how many incarnations of the Boss Man were there?
God.
There's the evil prison guard, the good prison guard, or corrections officer, excuse me. When he left for WCW, he was the guardian angel.
He was the boss And then the man, right?
The man, yeah, I'm pretty sure he was the man.
And then he was the guardian angel, and then he changed his name to his real name, Big Bubba Rogers.
That's right, yep, his God-given parent's name.
Right.
Big Bubba. And then, yeah, upon returning to WWF, he was an evil prison guard again, but with, like, this maniacal edge to him.
Yeah, the most psychotic character in wrestling history.
And completely inexplicable, this change in his character. And, I mean, we can, I'll skip ahead one category and ruin a surprise, but one of the angles that was voted into the Stunt Granny Hall of Fame was the Big Boss Man, Big Show coffin angle.
Yes.
Where Big Show, how did this go? I cannot remember if the Big Boss Man, or if the Big Show's dad actually died, or if this was just a, no, he actually did. Well, not in real life, but kayfabe storyline, he died.
In real life, he had been dead for years.
Yeah, but according to the story, he really died, and then the Boss Man just took all sorts of enjoyment in making fun of him for it.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Making fun of him and then insulting his mother and just fucking way over the top.
Yeah, writing disgusting poetry about Big Show's dad and calling out Big Show for being a big nasty bastard.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Where does this come from? After 10 years of him just being, you know, Cobb County, Georgia corrections officer in a blue shirt.
Right.
Now all of a sudden he's a fucking creep.
Right. Even in WCW, when he was a bad guy, he was like a generic bad guy. He just did bad things, you know?
Yep.
But now he's like fucking evil.
Yeah.
No idea.
Who knows?
That came from, whose idea that was. I don't know if it was Russo or if it was the shitheads directly after Russo.
Yeah, timing-wise, that coffin angle would have come right after Russo.
Yeah, this is a case where I don't want to blame Russo for something he didn't do, just like Katie Vick.
Yeah.
He had no involvement in that. It might seem like he would have, but he didn't.
Right, but that was 3 years later. This was like 3 weeks later, though, which leads me to believe that maybe they had already written, because Boss Man was kind of a dick to begin with, like helping the McMahons arrest the 2% of ownership or whatever from Steve Austin that shifted the balance of power, and whatever. So he was involved in stuff like that. But then, like, he turned it. And then, like, well, when was the Kennel in a Cell? That was September of 99, if I remember right, which would have been pre-Russo leaving.
Yeah.
So he was already set up. Yeah, so he was already set up to be a creep.
Yep.
So I do blame Russo.
Yeah, okay.
Not to say they couldn't have gone a different direction after he left, but they didn't. I blame everybody.
And it's a goddamn shame that he died, because I'd pay much, much money to hear a shoot with him.
Oh, my God,
talk about how that came about and whose idea it was and what he thought of it.
Yeah. Definitely. Oh, who knows? Maybe some of his friends know. Some of his friends who are still around and can vouch for various things. That'd be interesting, though, to know.
Yeah, they should ask Cornette about it. He was around then, I think.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely. Or Al Snow, you know, find out. Get Al Snow's point of view of the Kennel in a Cell. Or get Big Show's point of view of the coffin angle.
Al, do you miss Pepper?
Nice. Well, I never really used it, but, all right. Well, hey, Big Boss Man's tag team partner in the Twin Towers made it into the Hall of Fame, too. Our boy Akeem, the guy who we're going to name this fucking thing after anyway.
Right.
I don't know what
he's too fat to fit in the pod or whatever.
Yeah. With a skinny pimp-lock manager. God. I honestly don't remember one Akeem promo.
I do. Right off the top of my head. Right before he left, they were feuding him against Saba Simba.
Mm-hmm.
And he accused Saba Simba of being a phony African.
Fantastic. That might even be enough said.
I have always liked Akeem. FTW, Akeem was great. he was different, you know, a big man wrestling a big man style. He's mm-hmm. another one, like we talked about in the ECW audio, where Wade just doesn't get it.
Yep.
You know, a lot of high-flying and fucking five-star matches, that's all nice. But every now and then, you got to have somebody who's fucking different.
Yeah. Yeah, Akeem was definitely different.
Yep.
And, he, you know, one-man gang, that was one thing. But even, to me, even that was generic. Like, it just wasn't... Maybe I missed out on the height of the one-man gang, but I didn't think he was nearly as defined as, I hate to say it, but as Akeem. I mean, as a lot of large heels were. You know, I always knew what the motivation was of a guy like Andre the Giant or King Kong Bundy or something like that.
Right.
But Akeem was just, one-man gang was just a mess.
Yeah.
Like, he'd wear a half a denim jacket or sleeveless denim jacket. He'd wear that god-awful-looking black singlet.
Right.
He had kind of a mohawk, but not really up in the air.
Yeah.
Tattoos, but he was always, like, smiling.
Right.
And he would bellow like Stan Hansen when he wasn't a cowboy.
Yep, yep.
He was from Halsted Street in Chicago, which, last I heard, I thought Halsted Street was where Boys Town was.
Me too.
Like,
me too.
What would define one-man gang?
Yeah, it's a fucking mess.
Yeah,
didn't make any sense, but Akeem was very nuanced, actually.
Yeah, definitely.
And it was another case where you could tell George Gray was having fun playing that character.
Yep. Yeah, better than Crusher Broomfield.
Yeah.
Better than One Man Gang. And he laughed all the way to the bank. Hell, he and Big Boss Man main evented against... Randy Savage and Hulk Hogan X number of times in 88 and 89, so fuck, why not?
Absolutely. They went around the house show loop with it. They made a lot of money.
Hell yeah. He stayed
absolutely
employed. And
nothing wrong with that.
Nope, not at all. So good for him. And had he not stayed employed, some of his shit might have had to go into Hawk. And had that would have happened, guess who would have driven up to his house, taken his car, taken his
shit.
Well,
it would have been none other than the Creepo Man.
The Repo Man. Repo Man himself, Barry Darso.
Yes.
The only other guy who's probably neck and neck with Brutus Beefcake for a number of gimmicks.
Yum. Crusher Khrushchev.
Yep.
Demolition.
Yep.
Blacktop Bully.
Oh, yeah.
Repo Man.
Yep. Was he, I can't remember, he was a golfer. He was hole-in-one Barry Darso.
Hole-in-one Darso, yep.
Jesus.
Wearing the Payne Stewart outfit. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yep. That's why I always thought that there was a wrestler named Stuart Payne, but maybe I made that up.
I think they called him that first.
I think they did it first, too. Like, I thought I read in an old Torch, back when they used to take 4 weeks of WCW Saturday night.
Yeah, yeah.
That he had come in as hole-in-one Stuart Payne or something like that, but then...
Sure.
You know, I'm sure if they changed their mind, they probably cut out the actual introduction and just, you know, overdubbed
the announcement.
Yeah, and then just like plastered the new name over on the graphic on the screen.
Right.
But as far as Repo Man goes, I mean, how hilarious was that character?
Oh, tremendous. Those introductory vignettes, once again, you could tell the guy was clearly having fun playing that character.
Uh-huh.
And, him repo stuff. He repoed Bill Alfonso's car once.
You're goddamn right. On Coliseum Video, Invasion of the Body Slammers. You're goddamn right he did. Fucking Fonzie. That's my car, Daddy!
That's my car, Daddy! Everybody is Daddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, next year we have to get a manager's announcer's wing. We have to.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because Fonzie and Bobby Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon are shooing.
Yeah,
Repo Man from the start, you know. What's mine is mine. Manager is mine. And he was giggling too, and he would get up in that high-pitched voice.
Yeah.
He had his stupid tow rope, and for a while he had a coat that spelled out Repo and license plates, and then it was spelled out and tired. than tire tread.
Mm-hmm.
God, how great. He had an Iowa license plate that spelled out repo at one point.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he did.
Yep. So that was Mark City for me.
Nice.
But, yeah, I mean, and then just even little things that, like, that stick out to me, like the ring introductions for the WrestleMania 8-man tag, when Ray Combs was making fun of him for, I think, was he the one who was Two-Face?
Yes. You can't call him Two-Face because he'd darn sure be wearing the other one right now.
That's what the survey said.
I'm just saying what the survey said. Please.
The late Ray Combs. Jesus, is there any way that we can talk about some living people tonight?
No, not at all.
No? That's not in the spirit of Stunt Granny, friend. Yeah. The Repo Man, what a great character. Just another shiesty, shady fucking, but hilarious. Like, you couldn't help but laugh at the guy. That's actually part of the thing about this category, too, is that when you're warped like we are, you can't help but laugh at some of this shit.
Right.
Like the, now he'll be buried and eating my worms.
No, he was over the top and kind of cheesy, but the right kind of cheesy, you know?
Yeah, yep.
And he just played that character to perfection.
Yeah, he did. He really did. And
it might not have been what he made the most money in his career doing, but I'll be damned if it wasn't awesome, you know?
Well, and another guy who was able to reinvent himself and stay employed.
Yep,
You know, Demolition had run its course, and Axe was on the outs, and I know he was sick, and then he ended up being well enough to wrestle on the indies, and that left Smash and Crush, who kind of floundered around as the next coming of Demolition. Crush just wasn't a strong enough personality to get over with the crowd as a heel either. So then he had to go his separate way. He was reinvented as Kona Crush, the Hawaiian with the neon outfit, who was what he was. I mean, I didn't really think he was anything special. I was glad he didn't win the Intercontinental title for Shawn Michaels, frankly.
Yeah.
So then,
I was really glad they didn't give the 4th of July push to Crush. People they were thinking of.
Yeah, that would have been terrible. More power to Barry Darso for sticking around.
Yeah,
grabbing a different character out of the grab bag and running with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
God, here's another kind of common theme through the Stunt Granny Hall of Fame ordeal. Here's another guy with a high-pitched scream, Norman Smiley.
Oh, yes.
And to be honest with you, when I think of Norman Smiley, I do think of Screaming Norman, but I also think of the quasi-Saturday night jobber with the ashy butt cheeks that would do the crossbow fucking gimmick.
Yep. Yep. He was on Saturday Night for months.
Yeah.
Before they ever really started using him.
Yeah. Yeah, he and my friend Scotto would like to say Saturday Night Bobby Eaton. So.
Yep.
Like those two had a permanent home there for a while. And then Norman got called up to Nitro.
And he just did this total chicken shit heel thing.
Yep.
Like wearing the catcher's mask and stuff.
Shoulder pads.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And they put this guy who's a decent worker in the hardcore division.
Yeah.
So do you have any idea whose idea, sorry to use that word twice, the Screamin' Norman character was? I don't.
I have no idea. I think Kevin Sullivan.
Okay. Well, to the credit of whoever came up with the idea, I'm sure they wanted another body for the hardcore division.
Right.
Good for them for taking a good wrestler and not making him work a hardcore style, yet still be entertaining and doing it.
Yep. Really the perfect guy, you know, between entertaining work and good work.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because good work, Wade Keller, isn't always arm bars and arm bars.
Yeah.
Good work.
Wade Keller has a very narrow definition of what wrestling should be.
Uh-huh.
And talks many times like he's never seen a wrestling match before.
Yeah, yeah.
And
wrestling should be MMA without headlocks.
yeah. Headlocks have been used for years to great effect, you know?
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I know there are other perfectly good transition moves, but you know, Jesus Christ. The beauty of
and
the
especially
fucking...
when the guy holds it like he's ripping your fucking head off, don't go after him of all people.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, and the good thing about a headlock or a chinlock, it lets the wrestlers talk to each other if they need to. That's not a bad thing either. Maybe if you let the wrestlers talk to each other, they can put on those 4- and 5-star matches you like so much.
Exactly.
Well, anyway, maybe Wade Keller gets inducted into the Fun Wrestler Hall of Fame next year.
He might. He just might.
He just might.
He could definitely be inducted into the Prank Caller Hall of Fame, but that's another thing.
Yeah, gobble gobble, huh?